Chapter 5. A Night of Carnage and Tears. Still at the restaurant, Carlos and his companion were immersed in the bowl game, their attention riveted on the TV closest to their table. While they occasionally ordered appetizers to justify their presence, they abstained from alcoholic drinks, their mission, a matter of utmost seriousness. As the third quarter drew to a close, Carlos settled the bill, and they exited the restaurant, leaving the parking lot in Carlos's gray SUV. Their destination was a nearby public park, where they pulled into the parking lot and turned off the motor. Then they quietly sat in the darkness together. The parking lot was completely empty, and mostly dark with just a couple of dimly lit streetlights. After a few minutes, and with the interior lights off, the man accompanying Carlos took off his large and loosely fitting coat. Then reaching around onto the back seat, the man removed a rather large item from a box. The item had significant weight to it, and was awkward to handle within the confining space of the SUV. Working in the dark, Carlos gave him a hand, delicately moving the item to the front seat. As it turns out, the mysterious item had the shape and physical characteristics of what could only be an explosive suicide vest. With what seemed to be a practiced procedure, the man partially reclined his seat, and with help from Carlos, put the vest on, and then his coat on over top the vest. With the transformation complete, the man rested for a few moments. Next, the companion retrieved a string of prayer beads from his coat pocket, and began to pray fervently. Carlos, satisfied with their preparations, took out his phone and focused on the bowl game, paying particular attention to the remaining time, as if a deadly countdown had begun. Back at the Alamo Center, Dave, Juan, and Mac leaped to their feet to celebrate once again. With less than 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, the Texas team scored another touchdown and extended their already big lead. It was seemingly impossible for their team to lose at this point. Dave said with a big smile, "Hey guys, this game is in the bag." Then he asked, "How about if we bug out a little early to beat some of this crowd?" The guys were getting weary and gave Dave's suggestion a brief discussion. They all agreed. Their desire was to avoid getting stuck within a sea of people, all trying to leave the Alamo Center at the same time. As the guys began to make their way out of the stadium, a lot of other people had the same thoughts, also eager to avoid the post-game rush out of the stadium. Sam and Violet were just getting back to the stadium, and it was near the end of the game. The departing traffic was a formidable challenge to get through. Suddenly, Sam slammed on his brakes, narrowly avoiding a collision with a car that had cut them off. Sam angrily said, "That idiot in the gray SUV just cut me off. I saw him coming and driving crazy in my rearview mirror. He's heading towards the stadium, the same as us. Why is he in such a hurry to get stuck in traffic?" Violet just shook her head, her expression a mix of disbelief and annoyance. The traffic crawled along, a frustrating procession of stop and go. Sam and Violet found themselves trailing behind the same SUV that had so rudely cut them off. Abruptly, the SUV pulled off to the right into a no-parking zone, close to one of the main entrances to the stadium. A man immediately got out on the front passenger side. Violet was watching the man closely, because he was in the wrong place, and he seemed a bit odd. He was wearing a peculiar large and long coat, and his face seemed to be too thin for his chest to be so broad. Then the man pulled back his sleeve, and he wrapped what looked like prayer beads around his wrist. Violet yelled out, "Sam, did you see that guy that just got out of the SUV? The car that cut you off?" Right after he got out of the car, he wrapped what looked like prayer beads around his wrist, as if he was just praying, then put them away. The man just stood there, looking toward the stadium entrance with the car door open, seemingly perhaps, reluctantly pondering his fate. Violet rolled down her window, and as Sam drove slowly past the now close gray SUV, between the well-lit parking lot and the interior lighting in the SUV, Violet got a good and long look at the driver, and he glared right back at her. The driver was wearing a dark long-sleeve flannel shirt, and he gave a small subtle wave to Violet as she stared. Violet said, "He looks like he could be Middle Eastern. Sam, I've got a really bad feeling about this. I'm calling it in. Stop the ambulance here." Unknown to Violet, she was staring directly at Carlos Mendoza, and him and his associate were definitely targeting the Alamo Center. Violet reached for the radio mic, her voice urgent, "This is EMT Violet Wheeler calling stadium security. We have an emergency." Security responded promptly, "Go ahead, Violet." Violet replied, "There are two highly suspicious men driving a gray SUV parked behind our ambulance. We're near the southwest entrance of the Alamo Center." She paused for a moment, glancing at Sam, then asked, "Please dispatch officers to investigate immediately. Proceed with caution." There were a few seconds of silence, then security responded, "Officers will be dispatched immediately." Violet provided more details as she continued speaking into the mic. "Use our ambulance as a reference, and like I said, we are stopped, and the gray SUV is parked 40 feet behind us." At the same time, Dave, Mac, and Juan had made their way from their seats and were just coming out of the stadium. Feeling a sense of relief that they were ahead of the big surge of people about to exit the stadium, Mac went ahead to the rideshare station to secure a ride before the exiting crowd overwhelmed the service, while Dave and Juan stopped off at a t-shirt stand to see if they could score a quick last-minute deal on a shirt. Stadium security swiftly contacted four nearby officers, directing them towards the ambulance and instructing them to investigate the suspicious situation. Meanwhile, Carlos noticed that the ambulance had stopped for no apparent reason. Sensing that their cover might be blown, he yelled at his associate to close the car door and get moving. The man, with stressful fear in his eyes, complied and began slowly walking towards the grand staircase, which led to an upper mezzanine level and the stadium entrance. Carlos, reckless and desperate, dangerously sped away from the scene, weaving past the line of cars waiting to exit the parking lot. Violet noticed Carlos's hasty departure in her side mirror, so she jumped out of the ambulance and waved frantically at the approaching officers. She shouted to the officers with her voice filled with urgency, over here, come quick, hurry!" The officers rushed towards Violet, their attention drawn to her frantic gestures. With the officers near, Violet pointed up the stairs, saying, "That's the guy, he's the only guy going up the stairs, that's him." The officers began running toward the stairs, when Violet grabbed one officer's arm, stopping him. While pointing towards one of the exits, she said, "Wait, look out in the parking lot. That gray SUV heading to the exit, he dropped off the guy going up the stairs, and he is getting away. With this traffic, you might be able to catch up to him on foot." As the man wearing the vest reached the top of the stairs, he spotted the officers in pursuit. They were not far behind and running up the stairs toward him. The man panicked, then bolted toward the stadium entrance. Both Sam and Violet were standing behind the ambulance watching the pursuit of the officers. There were two officers in pursuit of the man wearing the vest, and two officers running across the parking lot, attempting to catch up with the gray SUV. Violet pointed up the stairs and said, "Sam, the guy that got out of the SUV, he's running from the police. This is really bad. He's guilty of something." She was thinking about the explosion of the suicide vest from just the night before. As she stared into Sam's eyes with a frightened look on her face, she said, "Sam, I think something really terrible is about to happen." Dave and Juan were walking away from the stadium entrance, in the general direction of the grand staircase. With big smiles, they were pleased with their purchases of souvenir t-shirts. At the top of the stairs, the officers pulled out their firearms, and one of the officers yelled commands at the top of his voice, "Hey you, police, guy running, stop!" Unfortunately, the man with the vest was running directly towards Dave and Juan, and they were completely unaware of the events leading up to this moment. But Juan recognized a police chase when he saw it. As the guy ran past, Juan tripped him, and the guy took a hard fall onto the pavement. As Juan stood over the guy he had just tripped, the guy pulled the pin out of a trigger device that he held in his hand. Juan immediately recognized that the guy he had tripped was holding a bomb trigger. Juan jumped onto the guy and began wrestling him for control of the trigger. Dave stepped back as the two pursuing officers caught up. Juan yelled to the other officers, "Bomb, he has a trigger in his hand." The officers looked at each other, hesitating, not sure about what to do, while Dave took a few more steps further back. At the same time, the fans leaving the stadium were backing away, just far enough to give some space to the officers and the struggle on the ground, but several stayed dangerously close, with their cell phones out, attempting to record the event. What seemed like such a fun and perfect day, perfect in every way, a promising event that had been planned and eagerly anticipated for over a month, was about to go horribly wrong. While we may strive to understand the forces that guide our lives, fate often reveals itself in unexpected ways. The inherent unpredictability of life serves as a constant reminder that even the most carefully made plans can be derailed by the twists and turns of luck, or bad luck in this case. Although Juan initially was able to keep his grip over the guy's hand, with an unfortunate twist of the wrist, he lost his grip in the struggle, the man released the trigger, and the vest instantly detonated. The explosion was huge, shrapnel sprayed the officers, the crowd, and Dave too. Unfortunately, Juan was instantly blown into pieces, everyone in the vicinity was knocked to the ground, and the devastation and carnage was immense. From Sam's and Violet's point of view, from in the parking lot, they did not see the struggle for the detonator, or the people nearby, but they heard the explosion, and they saw the fireball roar up the side of the stadium. Light from the fire lit up the sky outside of the stadium, and even at this distance away, they felt a flash of heat on their faces. They even felt the concussion from the blast wave. Sam knew from his military experience what had just happened, and he yelled out with horror in his face, "Violet, get the medkits, I'll call it in, we got to get up there with the medkits and stretchers super fast." The officers that were on foot pursuing Carlos in his car narrowly missed him as he exited onto the main road and sped away. The sound of a huge explosion echoed through the air, drawing their attention back to the stadium. They had failed to apprehend Carlos, but the explosion had created a new urgency, forcing them to abandon their pursuit and return to the stadium. Mac had also heard the explosion while at the rideshare station. He quickly turned around to see the fireball racing up the side of the stadium. "Oh my God," he said to himself as he briskly began walking back to the stadium. He immediately recognized that this was a very dangerous explosion, and tried frantically to reach Dave by phone. When Dave didn't answer, he began to run. He quickly arrived at the top of the grand staircase, and what he saw was beyond his worst imagination. There was blood and bodies everywhere, and the cries of the injured and the smell of explosives filled the air. What he saw was complete devastation of the people who had been anywhere near the blast. Mac called out for Dave and Juan, calling their names, over and over as he walked through the carnage looking for his friends. The mezzanine was filled with a smoky haze, and people lay everywhere. Then he spotted what looked like Juan, but just his upper torso. Juan had been blown apart, into pieces, with just his arms and shoulders connected to his head. Mac was stunned, and didn't know what to do. Emotionally dazed, he fell back and leaned against a wall. A lady splattered with blood and kneeling next to someone, reached up and grabbed Mac's leg. Her face was horrified and full of tears, as she screamed with a crying and desperate plea, "Can you help my husband? He's not moving, please, please help my husband," she said, shaking with fear and looking up at Sam. The lady released her grip on Sam's leg, turning back to her husband. Then she lovingly caressed her husband's face and kissed his cheek, almost as if kissing him goodbye. The shrill of everyone from the injured and those trying to provide aid and comfort roared as hundreds of people cried, screamed, and called for help. Violet and Sam were the first medics on the scene, and it was worse than horrific. As all the fans screamed and cried for help, the entire area was engulfed in an ear-piercing shrieking chaos, and the scent of blood and burnt explosives filled the air. Many people had huge wounds, blood was everywhere, and a lot of the injured people were motionless and silent. The smoky haze filtering the light blanketed the mezzanine in a soft amber glow. At a glance, it was clear that numerous people had already lost their lives. The other police that had been working security around the stadium, and the medics from the first aid station began to arrive. A lot of the uninjured fans were frantically attempting to help the injured. Sam conducted a scene assessment, and began handing out medical supplies to people trying to render aid. Sam yelled out to everyone, "Look for people who are bleeding, we need to stop the bleeding first, ambulances are on the way. We've got to stabilize everyone for transport." Sam was attempting to direct efforts to stabilize the wounded, while Violet was focused on tending to a man with severe injuries to his legs. Mac collected himself, then began searching for Dave again, stumbling about as he tried to get through the injured crowd. Finally, he spotted Dave lying on the ground, with his eyes closed. Violet was feverishly tending to his wounds, trying to stop the bleeding. Mac kneeled down next to Violet and Dave, saying, "This is my friend, we're here together." Violet replied, "I'm sorry, but your friend is not doing well. I need for you to stand back and let me work. I got this." Mac moved back, then sat on the ground and watched. His friend's legs had suffered a lot of damage and he was lying in a puddle of blood. Dave gradually began to regain consciousness as Violet continued to administer first aid to him. Recognizing he was waking up, she tried to converse with him. "Hi, my name is Violet. I'm going to patch you up and get you to the hospital. Just don't move anything. Try to stay completely motionless." Dave began to breathe heavily and frantically yelled out, "I can't feel my legs," he cried out over and over, "my legs, I can't feel them." The shrapnel had torn through Dave's clothing and had made deep wounds into his legs, exposing bone. Violet had applied a series of bandages over his largest wounds, attempting to stop the blood loss. Sam came close to see how Violet was doing and asked, "How is he?" Violet looked at Sam with a distressed look. "I'd stopped most of the bleeding, but I can't see inside. He has already lost a lot of blood and his pulse is weak. He's saying he can't feel his legs. He may have nerve damage or a spinal injury. He needs to get to a level 1 trauma center fast." Sam replied, "Okay, we'll transport him to the hospital, right now." Back at the Johnson home, the women were having a good time with their football party, when a game announcer came on over the TV with an emergency announcement, stating that there had been an explosion at the Alamo Sports Center, and there were casualties. All the wives looked at each other in disbelief. Julie asked, "What did he say?" The announcer then repeated the news of the explosion. After a moment of silence, and the exchange of shocked staring glances, Julie urgently said, "Everybody, call our husbands. When you get through, let everybody know." The ladies frantically grabbed their phones and began calling. As Sam brought a stretcher alongside Dave, Mac received a phone call from his wife Abby. Still not thinking clearly, he stood up, staring at the phone, not knowing if he should answer it. He knew Abby was with Julie and Maria at Dave's house, Juan was for sure dead, and Dave was badly hurt. In his whole life, he had never had to give anyone such terrible news. As he slowly walked away, he was picturing Maria and Julie, and thinking, "How do I do this? How to tell my friend that her husband is dead? And another friend that her husband is badly hurt and will be heading to the hospital. If I tell Abby what happened, she will have to tell Maria about Juan." Mac glanced around, taking in the gruesome surroundings. "For sure, I can't answer the phone with all the screaming and crying in the background. How do I do this? I need a plan." Just then, the phone stopped ringing. He had missed the call. He said to himself, "I just need some time to figure this out." With Mac distracted and struggling with Abby's incoming phone call, with the assistance of two other medics, Violet and Sam lifted Dave onto the stretcher, and they had quickly left the area. Making their way down the ramps of the handicap walkway, they were on the move with Dave and heading towards their ambulance. As they hurried with their patient, they could see that a couple more ambulances had just arrived, and there were more seen coming in the distance. Mac turned around to check on Dave, but Dave was gone. After looking around, he spotted the paramedics wheeling Dave toward the ambulances. Mac was emotionally distraught and confused. He didn't know where to begin on how to deal with this unimaginable nightmare, and his thoughts were racing about what he should do. He knew that he couldn't help Dave, so his thoughts shifted to how to reach out to Maria and Julie to tell them about what has happened. Mac decided that something like this needs to be said in person, but time was of the essence. "I got it," he said to himself as a plan came to him. Mac quickly walked away from the scene, and then called the Canyon City Police Department. His plan was to explain the situation to the police, and then have them send officers to Julie's house. The officers could give the wives the bad news, and at the same time, provide some stability to their situation. At the Johnson home, the ladies kept calling their husbands while nervously pacing around the living room, and they also kept an eye on the TV for more information. Although Dave was able to send texts with photos to all the wives early in the game, none of the ladies were getting through to their husbands now. Each wife could only get through to a digital voice, stating that the system was busy, and for them to try back later. It wasn't long before the sports announcer came on the TV and announced that the game had been officially stopped and was over, due to an explosion near the stadium entrance. Abby suggested, perhaps with everyone trying to make phone calls, the phone system was just overloaded. With Sam driving, and Violet in the back tending to the patient, the ambulance made its way through San Antonio towards the hospital. Violet inserted an IV into Dave's arm, and then she attached an EKG to monitor his heart. In an attempt to learn more about her patient and assess his state of mind, She asked, "What's your name?" He didn't respond and continued a blank stare. But she persisted. "Can you tell me your name? Do you live in San Antonio?" But he gave no response. Dave was very weak and barely able to speak, but finally managed to begin a conversation with Violet, saying, "Your name is Violet, right?" "Yes, sir. Can you tell me your name?" she asked. "Thank you, Violet. Thank you for being here for me and trying to save me." Dave's mind was focused on assessing his perilous condition, and he seemed to have begun saying his goodbyes. "You'll be fine," she replied. "We'll get you to the hospital, and they will fix you up like new." He was struggling to talk, but he managed to continue speaking. "Thank you, Violet, but somehow, I can feel my life slipping away. I know the score here. I know I'm not going to make it." Violet looked over her instruments, then replied, "Just hang in there, sir. We'll be at the hospital shortly. Can you tell me your name?" Violet was about to receive a unique and profound request from her patient, one that was about to change her life. She was about to be asked to do something that she had never considered during her years as an EMT. She was about to be asked to fulfill a patient's, seemingly, last request. "Violet, may I hug you? I need a hug, please." Dave desperately pleaded, and then reached up to Violet with outstretched arms. "Please." She ignored his request at first, but she also knew that he might not survive. He asked again, "Please, one last hug." His request touched Violet's heart, and to accommodate her patient, she nervously said okay. She hesitated for a moment, but then leaned over Dave, and he reached up and pulled her in for a tight hug. Dave began breathing heavily and struggled to speak, saying, "You live your entire life, taking hugs for granted, until it's your last hug. This is my last hug. Promise me that you will pass on this hug to my wife and my children." Violet began to pull away, but Dave held on. "Please, you are the keeper of my last hug. Please, promise me that you will pass this hug on to my family. Tell them to be the max." Dave's voice was becoming increasingly frantic and louder. "This is my last hug, and I need for you to get it to them, please. Only you can do this. You're the one, the only one." Reluctantly, she finally agreed to her patient's wish. "Okay? I'll do it." Dave hugged her even tighter and became even more frenzied. "You promise, please promise me, tell them to be the max." "Yes. I promise you, I'll do it," she agreed. Dave's voice gradually began to soften and fade. He whispered, saying, thank you, Violet, thank you so very much." As Dave began to release her from the hug, he slowly exhaled, and then a moment later, the heart monitor alarm sounded. Dave's heart had stopped beating, and he went into cardiac arrest. Violet pulled out the defibrillator and placed the pads onto Dave's chest, then applied a discharge. She looked over her monitors, and there was still no heartbeat. Violet quickly began a CPR protocol, starting with chest compressions. Violet yelled out to Sam through the intercom, "Sam, cardiac arrest, starting CPR." Sam yelled back, "We're pulling into the hospital now." As they drove into the ambulance entrance, adjacent to the emergency room, Violet continued the CPR. At the ambulance entrance, already waiting outside were numerous members of the hospital staff. The hospital staff was poised for the arrival of mass casualties. As Dave was being unloaded, Violet informed the receiving staff of her patient's situation, saying, "The guy coded, just as we pulled into the hospital. He has lost a lot of blood, and his blood pressure had been very low all the way here, till he coded. There are substantial lacerations to his legs, and his legs have no sense of feeling." As Dave was being removed from the ambulance, a lady that appeared to be in charge, carrying a tablet and small printer, took Dave's photo, then photographed both Sam's and Violet's ID badges. The lady said, "You're just the first to arrive, and there are lots more coming." The receiving hospital staff transferred Dave from the ambulance stretcher onto a rolling trauma bed, then rushed him into the emergency room. As soon as the patient was being moved into the hospital, the lady said, "Samuel, load your stretcher right away, and get ready to move your ambulance out of here." The lady in charge was attempting to document the patients as quickly as they arrived. "Violet, tell me about the patient. What's his name?" "I don't know," Violet replied. "While he was conscious, I asked him for his name many times, but he never told me. With all the chaos, I didn't get it. He probably still has a wallet in his pocket. I didn't search for it. The lady asked, "Tell me about his family members. Did he have any family there?" Violet answered, "He had no family there that we saw. He was at the game with a friend who was uninjured by the explosion." The lady was a bit frustrated, saying, "Okay, so we don't have any information on this guy for now. Do you need to restock any supplies in your ambulance?" "Yes, definitely," Violet was quick to say. Then she explained, "We used up a lot of bandages to stop his bleeding, and we also handed out a lot of bandages to others. There were a lot of people trying to help the wounded." The lady printed out an identification bracelet and waved over a nurse, then quickly spoke to both Violet and the nurse. "This is Cindy. Cindy, I want you to go inside and immediately tag the patient that just went inside. Violet, you go with Cindy. When Cindy finishes tagging the patient, tell her what you need and she'll get it for you." While Violet had been dealing with the hospital staff, Sam had secured the stretcher back inside the ambulance. The lady called out to him, "Samuel, move your ambulance over to that other area of the parking lot. You can finish your preparations there." Immediately after Sam pulled away from the emergency room entrance, another ambulance was pulling in. Sam waited in the adjacent parking lot, where he readied the ambulance, then waited for Violet to return. Inside the hospital, Dave had been moved into the emergency trauma room, so Cindy told Violet to wait outside while she tagged the patient. While she waited outside for Cindy, Violet caught a glimpse of Dave with the staff working feverishly to revive him. Eventually, Violet left the hospital with a bag of replacement gauze rolls, trauma dressings, and tourniquets. Once the supplies were secured in the ambulance, Violet and Sam raced back to the stadium. As a Trauma 1 rated facility, University Hospital was the most capable medical facility in San Antonio, and it was not far from the Alamo Center. Dave was in the best hands that a seriously injured patient could hope to be, and he got there fast. For now, Dave's fate would be left up to the highly trained professionals of University Hospital to work their magic.